the Daily Talk Show, episode 588.
Jordan Michaelides, welcome to the Daily Talk Show, buddy. Welcome,
mate. Myself in.
Are you sure? Well, Tommy had his hands in his hoodie, which made it hard.
It was nice and warm, and I found a piece of egg in my... eggshell, sorry. If it was the egg bit, it would have been disgusting. But no, I've got a bit of shell in my hoodie.
Solid. You're a real mess today, aren't you?
Absolutely not, mate.
Milkshakes, milkshakes.
It was not a milk. It's a smoothie that was on his thing.
I mean, yeah. How's your food going?
Yeah, from actually, one milkshake guy. So Jordan is from Uncommon, the show, podcast.
Yeah, last time when I had you guys on, I wasn't eating food properly.
Yeah. Yeah, what, 153 you're up to. Episode 153. What was our episode? What number? Was that under the 100 or?
It was over the 100. We filmed 100. You guys, so it was definitely over 100. 120. I didn't actually check.
120.
120.
No, around that.
That's fine. But yeah, when we did meet you, that was for the first time. Now we've, you know, formed a bit of a friendship, had some Friday night drinks. It's, you know, we're going strong. You first had gotten off the food and gotten onto the smoothie food.
Yeah. That was not fun.
Well, it wasn't. It's not like you did it on purpose, like you didn't want to do that.
No. So long story short, I had anxiety, which was mainly panic disorder. And it sounded so ridiculous. I just remember when we spoke about it and you said to me, oh, come in on Fat Friday and we're going to get you to eat a burger.
Well, the funny thing is that like we thought about it, but we're like, we didn't want to be too gimmicky with you because like a panic disorder is probably not something that you
But I spoke to my psychologist about it and I said to her, I'm like, it just highlights how ridiculous this thing is.
Oh, so you're saying Josh was the reason you have now been able to start eating food?
No, it's just one of many catalysts that helped me get along the way.
Did she subscribe to the pod? Did you say the Daily Talk Show voice?
I didn't plug it for you.
Okay.
I plug it enough in the show, I feel.
Yeah. And your guests too.
But I had panic disorder and it got down to, it was so bad that the anxiety would make my mouth dry and then that would create this weird tick and sort of panic around eating solid food. I can't explain it other than how she explained it, which is it was a panic disorder. And the way it manifested for me was in your digestive tract. So they call it like visceral hypersensitivity.
Mine's breathing. I get into a sub yawn
as well,
where I can't like get oxygen in. And so I just keep going and it's...
I think that's a real... That's quite common, like...
No, but it's like it's that feeling of not being able to get breath.
You don't have enough oxygen.
Yeah.
Well, you're overthinking it.
Yeah.
So that was the issue. Mm. It was you start thinking about breathing and eating and normal things because you're so in your head.
Are you past it now?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I started taking it got to a point I did counseling. I think I did like 20 sessions and she was just like, look, you've gotten so far, you've done a lot of work, but you probably need to start taking, you probably have this underlying thing that probably runs deep in your family. I think that most of my family are quite A-type anxious individuals. Mm. And for me, it was just, this is how it manifested. So I ended up I take 20 milligrams of something called fluoxetine, which I'm pretty sure is Prozac in America.
Oh, yeah.
And was it make you feel?
Prozac the one that it just helps you study better?
No. You're thinking of
Ritalin.
Like Ritalin, yeah.
Adderall.
What's the benefits of Prozac, Seb? Should I get on it?
Look up fluoxetine.
It is. It's sold under the name Prozac.
Yeah. So here they brand it fluoxetine. I think it's just you know when you go to the chemist and they ask you, do you want branded or non-branded?
You always go non-branded,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
It's cheaper.
Yeah. What's the point? Yeah.
Asthma pump is like $7 versus $11.
My old mate's sister, she actually sells that stuff to all those chemists. So
legitimately?
She's a big pharma.
Yeah, big pharma.
It's like those movies where they go around on the door-to-door or like salespeople.
But most of the non-branded companies are basically smaller local companies that are making stuff because the IP, the patent, whatever has run out.
Like public domain. Like it's Disney
public knowledge. Yeah.
It's so dangerous. Like the EpiPen stuff, the... regulation, like the laws around companies and how much they can charge, because some of them are privately owned and can't be dictated through the government and get subsidies and stuff. Mm. So some of them could come out and say, nah, it's $1,500 a pen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all these people are panicking.
Well, insulin's one. My brother's got type 1 diabetes, and that, if you dig into that, that's a shit show. It's actually really fucking annoying how the pharmaceutical companies basically dictate how this person can live their life. Mm. Like, I had a mate as well who's got type 1 diabetes, and they've got this new thing now where they have a pump, which is basically mimics your pancreas, and you have these tubes and it goes into like a needle. So it's pumping you with insulin all day long, like you and I would do normally with our pancreas.
So if you ate sugar, it's like it can regulate
it,
you.
It can regulate it, yeah, based on your blood sugar. And he ran out of like these tubes, and they'd stopped selling the tubes that went with this model in Australia.
It's like fucking Sony cameras. You know, you've got to buy the specific.
It's ridiculous.
It's and like then Apple changing the
But his pump, he had to get a totally new pump, but his insurer wouldn't cover it. So he was like out of pocket by 10 grand. And then he had to work it out with his new insurer to get the actual pump. But anyway, back to your original question around what did it do. It just stopped me panicking.
Okay.
What does that feel like?
Like when you start focusing on your breathing, you just start focusing on your swallowing.
Mm-hmm. And so when you take the medication, it's completely
long
goes
acting.
Away?
It's long acting. So it takes like a few weeks to kick in and a few weeks to stop. But yeah, it just makes me feel normal. Like, I still have elements of anxiety, but I just don't panic anymore.
So is it so it doesn't just fix the swallowing thing, it fixes the cause, which then all the other things.
It fixes one of the key symptoms that blocks you from getting over this thing, basically.
Does it start, I wonder, like say something like that, does all of a sudden you have less fear, like jaywalking?
No.
So they've got it pretty like dialed in.
I think, I mean, this is the thing with psychology and, you know, using chemicals like this, right? Like we have these connections, and this is why the psychologist was saying to me that you're just not going to be able to stop this thing, because you build up this connection so strong in your brain that you'll actually take this medicine. It will stop the panic, but you still do it by habit.
Sure.
Wow.
So like I still do it a little bit with pills, but I don't have any panic, like no feeling of panic or anxiety.
Is that medication a pill?
Yeah.
That's fucking annoying at the start.
No, but it'll go over time. It's just that I have to
keep reminding myself. No, but at the start, like how the fuck do you swallow a pill? If you've got a problem swallowing and they're like, hey, to fix the swallowing, we need you to swallow this pill.
They just gave me a-
crush it down or some
not
shit.
Like one that if you put it in water, it sort of breaks down.
Oh, the dissolve.
Oh, yeah.
I used to give my dog a pill in butter. Do you remember that with dogs?
No.
Did you have a dog, Jordan, growing up?
I did, but I mean, we gave it in their food, not butter.
I used to get it in butter and just put it, and it'll go down.
Medication's a funny one. I feel like
Do you take anything?
Well, so I realized I've gotten into the habit of taking something, and I think it's low level, but we've got this migraine stick at home. And it smells like peppermint.
It's not medication. Okay, we're talking actual pharmaceutical drugs.
Because I was just wondering, because I've just started not even using it I put it on like this morning. I was like, I'll just put it on.
That's nice. Temples it's or like whatever. Putting tea tree oil on your little hands.
And so that is fine. Can you look up any? Well, because I guess you'd look at like no nasal spray.
That's a pharmaceutical drug
that can be an issue.
Yeah.
But no, I haven't taken anything, but I think that we're talking about the genetic test stuff. Which one did we get?
23andMe.
23andMe.
Yeah.
And so when I got the 23andMe done, it wasn't as regulated by – it's not the FCC. What is it in the US? The medical side of things?
The FDA?
FDA.
Yeah.
So the FDA went in and said, you can't be giving all this health information from a genetics point of view with 23andMe. You can only give the – like the genealogy, like the family stuff.
Origins and...
But I don't know if I log into the website, but I used to be able to see all these medical studies and whether I was like predisposed to certain things.
Yeah,
you still do that?
There's one called Found My Fitness.
So
basically what you do is you download the data. Yeah, Rhonda Patrick. And so you download the data, then you upload it to this other system, other piece of software. Rhonda Patrick's the most well-known one because she covers... metabolism and lipids, which is sort of the key thing for that we can all make decisions on. Like, there's no point putting it in for cancers and all this sort of stuff because you can't effectively make a decision
based on. So metabolism, what is it going to say? Josh, you got a slow metabolism.
Like as an example for me, I think I was saying this to Bree when we were talking about it, that I have this genetic thing that my mum has as well, where if I eat food that is higher in saturated fat, it actually spikes my blood glucose. So I noticed when I stopped eating as much saturated fat, I dropped like a few kilos.
Oh, this is good. Sebs, are you around this? Are you getting excited about this?
And so, hang on. The anomaly there is that saturated fat shouldn't be elevating your glucose.
For most people, yeah.
For most people.
Yeah.
So, you shouldn't go on fucking keto or something.
For me, I was on keto for a long period. Not a long period. Let's say 18 months.
Put on 20 kilos.
Yeah. Well, I put on weight.
Yeah. I was eating a lot of cheese. I fucking ate so much dairy. Well, more dairy than I should.
Cheese is fine if you're having an imbalance with something. Like I might have cheese with some salmon and so on. But it just, to me, it highlighted the fact that we all have a background, right? And there are certain foods that we are more obliged to based on that background. Like most of my ancestry is islands nearby the sea. So I probably shouldn't be having lots of beef based on that fact or, you know.
Do you like fish and chip shop a lot?
I have a lot of fish.
Where are the islands? Greek islands?
So Cyprus, which is near Turkey, and it's like a predominantly Greek. And then my mother's family is from like northern England, but near the coast.
Yeah.
But she's got this. She did the gene test as well. She's got this thing where like 90% of the population in Scandinavia has this gene. So. It sort of lends
to the
fact
good looking gene.
I don't know. I don't understand it fully, but it just seems like Vikings came over to this part of England and raped and pillaged, and therefore they have those genes.
Oh, fuck, it's so full on. Yeah. I mean, when you think about it like that, where how we've ended up here through those years.
It's a bit ridiculous.
I mean, so there's a few things going on at the moment in the world. The new disease that's broken out
in China,
the virus that's broken out in China.
That's nothing, by the way.
Oh, really, to tell us.
You got the insight.
I've been obsessed with it in the last 24 hours.
Is that out of a worry that you could like?
No, I love the movie Contagion. I love that movie. And I've loved, so one of my best mates, he's from Zimbabwe and his dad's probably one of the most preeminent, I don't know what they call them now.
He studies infectious disease.
He's in Johannesburg in South Africa. So he never migrated over to Australia because he had he was so prominent over in Africa and obviously
I thought you were going to say he caught one of the diseases.
No,
customs.
But so he taught me a few little facts. The first thing is what they call the kill rate. So as morbid as that sounds, you got to look at how many documented cases of people being infected versus how many people have died.
You really eyeballed me when you said kill rate.
At this point, 17 people have died from this. But
there's a lot of people that have been infected.
And then there's been people dying in hospitals that they haven't checked for this specific virus.
Another thing that he told me is that how quickly it comes about. So you can be infected and it can be dormant in your body for 10 days before you start seeing symptoms. And even those symptoms can be quite benign, like a cold or something like that. But if it's like immediate, which is what this disease is, then it's actually not an effective disease because your body will see it. It means that your body's discovered it very quickly and will start killing it off quicker.
The sooner you're seeing symptoms, the sooner the
better it is.
Yes, that's, yeah.
So basically who it will be bad for is immunocompromised, which is children and elderly people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why you go and get vaccinations.
I mean, how good are you guys at getting? So, you know, like people talk about anti-vaxxers and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So there's that side of things. And then there's the anti-adminers, which I guess it's
adminers.
Adminers. So it's like, I'm not anti-vax, but I'm not going to the doctor much. Like
Do we need to start setting up
flu shots?
No. You can.
Well, some workplaces
sounds like
do.
Sevs wants to.
You should.
Yeah, I'll do a flu shot.
I'd be happy to. Yeah. The thing. So no, let me tell you
real quick.
Let me tell you that.
What's your horoscope?
The kid. Oh, so in children, it is geared. So if you're an anti-vaxxer as a parent with a child,
no.
If you're an anti-vaxxer as a parent with a child. You're giving real pushback to the system because the government actually
holds money.
give you subsidies if you are playing ball and vaccinating. And so the anti-vaxxers, I mean, it is a pretty serious thing.
I think in Victoria they started imposing like financial impacts.
Oh, dude, we missed Bodie's vaccination at He was a bit sick. We took him in. They said, look, come back another time. We waited a couple of weeks. He got sick again as we booked in, just had a little cold. And then they're like, oh, hold off. And then we lost money. They held money for daycare, which means we were out of pocket severely. Really? It was fucked.
Little Bodie, we don't care if you're sick. You're getting this little
mate, I just like, jab. Give me the syringe. I'll do it. And so we got it done. But then it was very hard. It was admin city. Uh-huh. It created more admin than previously.
One place I don't want to visit.
So annoying.
Admin city.
Admin city. Horrible place. Hang
on, what is admin city? Is this Medicare? Dude,
people that don't like admin.
No.
That's it. I've got Centrelink and Medicare. Like Amy spent hours in that joint.
Medicare's all right.
Fucking have a kid and then try that, buddy.
Are you kidding me?
No, Medicare, you just swipe your card whatever.
What Medicare are you going to?
I don't go to any of them. Just use the card.
Centrelink is connecting with, and so the, so it is all a part. Like Amy's trying to.
It's all a part of like the MyGov.
Talk with the subsidies, disconnecting. Oh my god, yeah. The nightmare.
If you have
there.
To call, or if you ever have to go into a branch, it's a nightmare. Right off half the day.
Yeah, Centrelink aren't just giving dole payments; they're also looking after family benefits and shit like that.
This reminds me of do you guys know Michael Cusack?
No. I heard the name. Who is he?
We interviewed him recently, but he's like a cartoonist, and he does like a bit where it's like these Deros per se, these bogans at the center, like complaining about how long it takes, and they're just like, "Why don't you just give us a job?"
That's a good point.
Like,
it's fair.
No,
anyway, I just thought of that.
So, so there's the virus thing going on, but there's also, have you heard the conspiracy, Jeff Bezos?
That he what?
So
which one?
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's a few. Look it up, Sev. Yeah, so he is saying the Saudi prince WhatsApped him and infected his iPhone, and then these leaked text messages or comms through that someone would have had to have access to his phone
were
released, and it was about him cheating on his wife.
Yeah. Hang on, is this the
Can you just find it, mate?
Is this the crown prince?
Yeah.
So the Saudi prince was trying to get dick pics off. Yeah. Jeff,
hey, Jeff, what's up, buddy?
Yeah, exactly.
And then just infects his phone.
Honestly, I would not put that past the Saudis. Yeah.
Mate, how much money is at this?
He's throwing a lot of shade at the Saudis.
I said to Amy.
Look, I know the geopolitics of that area so well. And no one likes the Saudis. Like, Saudi people are lovely people.
Yeah,
but the Saudi government are awful.
I've been deep diving into Iran.
Mm-hmm. I want some clarity on this.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. And the 23andMe thing, I got 5% Iranian.
Yeah, he's Iranian. So potentially.
From my dad's side.
Potentially he won't like how Josh has been talking about it.
No, but it's actually. I've been saying nothing like what you've said about the Saudis.
Yeah, so the UN has called for an investigation into the allegations that Saudi Crown Prince was involved in hacking Jeff Bezos' phone.
Where are you reading this from?
The UN calls into everything.
This is literally on.
Is that the thing?
The United Nations Human Rights website.
Yeah. So when would? How do you get the UN involved? Is that scary? Is that big?
I don't know. The UN doesn't seem like a very powerful body to me anymore.
I mean, Jeff Bezos could be more powerful than anybody in the world based on his net worth. Like he's the richest guy in the world.
I don't know enough about it, honestly.
Couldn't he be paying off people?
Well, yeah, we don't know, do we?
Man, I love that.
Pure speculation.
At this stage, these are conspiracies, right? It's conspiracies.
Well, no, it's pretty latched onto if the
UN's like, talking about it. I think it's more than a conspiracy.
But what's interesting, like, how do you send that stuff through WhatsApp?
How about
for an iPhone? He's got an iPhone, yeah, for sure.
But WhatsApp and iPhones are pretty locked down.
That's what I meant, yeah. Like, Saudi shit going on.
All right, so how about this? How about
Prince shit?
All right. So the doco that I just watched this morning on Iran.
You're watching docos in the morning before?
What was it?
Dude, that's a lot. Like,
it's pretty indulgent.
That's indulgent.
Yeah. I was like, I'm like, I don't want to leave until the office and home until 8:45 so I can then get my coffee and be at the post office just after they open because I was collecting my books.
I love that you're doing this before our interview.
Yeah. That's what I do. Well, what did you do?
I just got up and went to a meeting.
Yeah, similar. But no, so I was watching this doco and do you guys remember that there was a virus? I think it was like mid-2000s that I remember it getting a bit of news coverage, but it was actually targeting a nuclear power site in Iran. Do you remember this?
The virus was
Stuxnet.
Yes.
What's it called?
Stuxnet.
Go Stux.
Stuxnet. S-T-U-X-N-E-T.
See, Stuxnet. You've got a very good memory because I watched the doco and I couldn't remember what the virus was called.
You remember what it did?
Yeah.
What did it do?
So
this is a game. This is. Are you testing his memory or you just want to know?
I want to know.
Well, yeah. How well was I watching the doco? So basically what it did was the nuclear power stuff has these fucking, I don't know what they're called.
Rods.
Yeah, tube things or whatever. And they've got like...
That's what the fuel cell is in.
Yeah.
It's a reactor, right? It's in a reactor.
And they've got like all these like mechanical bits, like there's a fan or some shit.
It's cooled by water, basically. Yeah.
And so what happened was, and why I thought it was interesting in regards to the disease and talking about the effectiveness of a disease, I guess you can look at a computer virus. You know, it's a virus. They specifically did the whole Stuxnet thing so that it would knock them out slowly. So they could have got it all happening straight away and fucked everything. But what they did is by turning on these like...
They turned the coolant up and down.
Yeah.
So it went into like mini... what's the word when a reactor
fails? Like
Homer
Simpson.
Meltdown.
Like it went into not a meltdown, but it was testing like these levels, but the software didn't show it on the display.
Mm.
So they only found out because... They caught it somehow. Like there was a guy in the reactor.
5,000 of those like rod things or whatever it's called. They didn't call them rods. They're like the big fucking. Sebs, can you say what it's?
They're rods. So the way it works, it's like a grid. It's like a big square grid, and they've got all these little rods that are like fuels, like
but
batteries.
What's in the the rod? There's an outside of the rod. What's that called?
It's some sort of metal.
Yeah, it's like a cylinder. Maybe it's like cylinder things.
And then the fuel is called a nuclear centrifuge.
Centrifuge.
Yeah, the centrifuge is the middle bit though. So the rods have got like you guys seen what was that?
The Simpsons?
No, the show Chernobyl.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, how good is that?
Yeah, great doco.
So you like
miniseries. No, miniseries.
All made up.
It's on Prime. Yeah, it's great.
No, it's about Chernobyl.
It was a joke, the fiction.
He was posting about it. I remember seeing there was you were posting like clips of the show.
It's unbelievable. But
so your nuclear chat right now, is this the equivalent of me watching an air crash investigation of an A380 and being like, I'm now an aviation expert?
My brother's me and my brother love this topic.
Okay.
So he studied maths and he's really into like nuclear energy.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so he's taught me a lot. But I wouldn't say I'm by no means an expert. I just find it really interesting.
Yeah, good that you remember. Like, I wish that I could remember shit. I'll remember it later, but it's too fresh.
Do you find in interviews, like, are there certain things that you forget? Like, I always forget last names, or sometimes I just forget names in the middle of an interview when I know that I should know this name.
What's like Ethan Didascalou? The day before he comes on, I'm trying to remember his name, how to say it. And on the day, like, you fucking stumble, or you sort of say it, you would have nailed his name.
It's not actually pronounced the right way. It's pronounced Arthur Didascalou. But he tells everyone I actually pronounce it the Greek way when I did my intro, and he's like, actually, can you do it again? Because I just go by like Ethan.
Really?
You did too much research.
He's just given up.
You overbaked it.
It's like with mine. Because
that's a good flex. I like that. It's like, oh, can I have that? It's like going to a restaurant and using
fillet
like
fillet of fish or fillet of fish.
You know,
mate, what's the fillet of fish?
Yeah. You just want the fish, don't you?
You mean the fillet of fish?
I mean, that's hard, isn't it? It's like going to a Thai restaurant and saying, you know, sawadi krap. And they're like, do you mean hello? Hi.
Oh, dude, I've been down a rabbit hole on YouTube of they're like real sort of like headline names for these videos. It's like white guy. Like blows Chinese people's minds by ordering in.
I've seen that.
Fluent Chinese. And so he's like this just white American dude walking in. It's like, hi, can I sit down? And then all of a sudden he's speaking just like, wang lang ha. It's amazing.
Oh, please don't do that.
It was close to it.
And so, yeah, I can imagine you clicking. Well, Hamish Blake did that in Italy.
What?
Learned a bunch of Italian.
Yeah.
and then impress the family.
It's not the same though. This guy's like a polyglot, yeah, where they know like multiple languages.
He spent a lot of time working on.
It's clearly like YouTube bait. Like he's going in there, he's pretending like, oh, I'm just this dumb fucking American guy.
Yeah, yeah. So he's setting it up like that. Fluent. But then there's a whole genre of this shit online.
I want to be that guy.
Everywhere.
What's an easy way that I could do it? Because that's a lot to learn Mandarin.
I think there's something like these people who can learn languages so easy. There's something that they just, the way that they learn, that they must have some sort of not genetic ability, but like a learning ability above others.
Isn't it annoying? They get that. And then what I get is like not being able to breathe and you can't swallow. Like it's a real, could go either way, right?
I think theirs is a choice. That other stuff is probably more happening.
No, but that's a genetic, like they're just genetically smarter than we are as well.
I think there's a whole people that are struggling genetically and have worked out how to maximize the little genetics they have.
Yeah.
And so that's like,
I think it's like your ability to learn. Maybe it's just like that they're better with like language than they are with numbers.
Well, I'm going to get, Sevs, what's the thing that I said I want to get into in 2020? The card thing. So remember shit.
Fuck, this is ironic. Oh,
Quizlet.
Yeah, Quizlet.
Do you think it is like the relying on Sevs now where you're trying to.
Well, I just remember everything.
Well, because the thing is, I've got. So this is how
he's already onto it. I can just see his eyes. Like he's already searching.
So I've got like. So I have. I reckon my problem is I'm taking too much information every day. So before I like come into the office, I've probably watched 2.5 hours of stuff.
It's fucking crazy, dude.
And so.
It's so crazy.
And then I like walk in and I'm like listening to stuff still.
You need
and I'm
a
like,
kid, mate.
Yeah, nah, but I wouldn't be able to consume all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so I guess the hard thing is that I'm like doing this and I'm just sort of hoping that some of it sticks.
What does stick?
Ethan Didaskalou, like how to say his name.
Yeah, but not at the time you needed it.
Yeah, yeah. But now it can. So we need to get him back on.
Just call him. I called him and I said I delivered that. One. Yeah, yeah, I said that.
And so, no, but I think that it takes time. And so I caught up with my mate Naysan, who we've got on the show tomorrow. And he's Persian. And so I was talking about Iran stuff and then sort of like going, hey, this is what I know. Like, tell me more. Like, what else? Mm. What else is there? But so I feel like I'm moving along. I remember more stuff. Remember, I couldn't remember Qasem Soleimani's name, the general.
A hard name,
but now I know it.
Yeah.
So I need to. The problem is that then all of my conversations are skewed with the little bit that I know. So
what helps you remember things though? Like, do you pair like a visual thing?
So Qasem, I did like a car symbol and a equal sign. So car and some Qasem Soleimani.
Yeah, that works. That's good.
How do you remember stuff?
I feel like I append like images to it.
Yeah.
Like if I think about a memory, I often think about like a photo of that situation, that topic, that book, whatever it may be.
So when you're researching, when you are one of the best researchers, I feel like whenever you are gotten someone on your show, within a few minutes they've said you've done your research.
Yeah, it's usually because back in 2009, you had an ABN registered under a company of Josh Jensen Family Production.
How much time are you spending on ASIC? Just looking at everyone. And so, yeah, what's the how do you get all the information and then sort of reconcile it into something that you can then use in an interview?
It's hard. I mean, I don't know. I spend a day just – or a few hours just getting as much – in, like just slamming my brain with information.
Mm-hmm.
I put it into this document, which generally has a structure because I want the interview to be sort of biographical. And then I'll go to bed that night. Maybe I'll think about it. Maybe I won't. But the next day I sort of – I've allowed my brain to sort of let it sift through and settle.
Mm-hmm.
And then – I'll just go through all of the notes and come up with like, you know, their early life and then key topics and then things that round out. So it's just consuming as much things as possible.
Do you listen to other podcasts where people have been on?
Yeah. Like your interview with Ethan was super handy. I like to see like, you know, things that aren't covered or are covered. So I don't want to cover things that have already been done.
Oh, definitely.
I hate that.
Yeah.
And
you know that there's certain people, especially if they're sort of in the media or being media trained, they know their story and they can just fall into the narrative.
Mm. Yeah. I like, do you guys watch Hot Ones?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really, I've always, my interview style was along that similar way that he sort of builds the preamble into mm-hmm. it. So you show that you're, you understand this thing about their history. Because some people just have like these PR lines in their head that they feel they have to mm-hmm. get out there. So I just give them, I just put it out there so they don't have to go through it again. And then I'll ask something that is different about that topic.
Like page 5 of Google, I feel like you spend a lot of time. Like you,
yeah, I always get down to page 10.
Yeah.
If
page
I can.
10, is it page 10?
Is page 10 where it gets good?
Depends on the person. I mean, like Ethan yesterday is a good example. He just has so much stuff that you get to page 10. Mm. It's just the same like PR related interviews. And so I look for the deeper interviews like the one that you guys did. He did an interview on the AFR, which was really quite in depth. Mm-hmm. And then he did another one for some magazine, direct-to-consumer mm-hmm. mag or something like that. That was super helpful.
Was he impressed by you being able to pronounce his name properly? Like, or no? If you got to do it again.
I think maybe he might expect it, being that we both really? Have a Greek background.
Can you speak Greek?
No, not a word. I can speak like random words, but not conversationally. I'm actually
The ones floating around in the primary school, yeah, Malacca and that kind
yeah,
of shit.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. And I went to Greek school for a week when I was like 5 or 6 when I was at primary school.
Fuck, so I remember like kids going to like Sunday Greek school. Yeah.
Mm. Bentley East Primary, I think it was. Bentley East on Brewer Road. Yeah. They had, do you know Bentley East Primary?
No, but I know that they went out that way.
Yeah.
Kids around my neighborhood, there were some Greeks that lived up the road. Ah, we had some of the best spits down there.
Yeah. So I went to there and I hated it. I got teased because I had like fairer hair and I couldn't speak much Greek at all. Like most of these kids are speaking Greek at home already. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm just this dumb Aussie kid, as they used to say.
dumb
Aussie kid. Dumb Aussie
and
kid.
And I couldn't speak much English. And so it was like, yeah, it was like being a baby again.
Do you feel sometimes then?
I really regret it. I really regret that my parents didn't follow through. And I have a theory that it's the parents, the mother who defines whether you'd learn a language mm-hmm. as a kid, because you spend more time with your mum in the first 2-3 years, let's mm-hmm. say. Like I've noticed that a lot of friends who are Greek, the ones who had fathers who are Greek versus mothers who are mm-hmm. Greek, the ones who had mothers are Greek, almost all of them speak fluent Greek.
That's why they, like when they're working in developing countries, they spend so much time
on the mother,
on the mothers and the women, because it's like if you can give the support to them, they're actually going to fucking, they hold the community together.
I think Christopher Hitchens spoke about this like plenty of times. Like if you educate and give women access to the proper healthcare, mm-hmm. then you can actually measure how many GDP points, like percentage points, mm-hmm. the economy will increase.
Yeah.
Which I find really interesting.
It is crazy that you could just, like Bodhi's born in Australia, you could drop him in Greece, Mykonos, he grows up and would speak fluent Greek.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Why don't you do it? Yeah. That sounds fun.
Well, you mean you shouldn't do that
too much? No, I like him a bit.
But you could maybe go.
I'd rather wait till he's 18, then we go party on the Mykonos.
Daily talk show live from Athens.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I've going to Athens.
Athens is great.
Yamas.
I've actually I've done a show. We've recorded from Athens.
Oh yeah, there we go. We've done a show from Athens.
Yeah, and the hotel I remember had great internet, especially because I'd just been in Paros. Where the internet was shit.
I mean, on the island or whatever, the
Athens, it was like, it was actually really good. I think I was getting like 100 megabits up and down. It was really good.
We'll be going, I mean, so my family's from Cyprus. We'll be going to Cyprus for our honeymoon next mm-hmm. year. You know, get back to the roots. But I've never been to Cyprus or Greece.
And you were looking at Japan for your wedding.
Yeah.
You love Japan, don't you, mate?
It's just more the fact that like we've got these big fam. I've got a big Greek family. My mum's family is also big. She's 1 of 10.
So is it a filter system? Like they don't want to go to Japan?
We were like, we just want to do an overseas wedding because that won't place as many obligations to have as many people as say if we have it here locally, yeah, but it proved
great thinking, mate. My brother did that in Bali and got 100-something people.
But that's what happens when you go to Bali. Like Bali, it's
Bali's not exactly.
I just don't think the logic's there unless you're going to Norway and
Japan. Like, but I guess I guess you got to find the most neutral place. Things that aren't neutral, like Fiji, Vanuatu, anything too tropical.
The rationale with Japan was that we'd been there twice in the last. 18 months for personal travel. And we're like, well, it's too far to go to Europe and spend all that money plus to have the wedding by the time we want to have it. Mm-hmm. So let's just go to Japan. It's quick, it's easy, and we'll have a look there. And as it proved otherwise, it's not easy.
You're not doing it there?
No. I mean, like a celebrant here as an example, a very good celebrant, you'll pay $1,000 to $1,500. They speak English for a start. You won't have any issues registering the marriage, whereas over there, it's like $4,000 for a decent celebrant.
So yeah,
what the hell?
Yeah, because they have to the way they have like provinces. You got to have the wedding. Let's say you have it in Nagano, which is just outside Tokyo, and then they've got to register the marriage there. Then that marriage has to be registered with the embassy. Then the embassy. From both sides has to recognize it, then you've got to go back and register.
Yeah, you fucked it.
It's just ridiculous.
Or you could get married at the office in the CBD here in Melbourne and then go and have a wedding, pay an actor, $800 from Star Now.
Elvis, they'll dress up as whatever you want. Matt Diavella did the
drive-through wedding Vegas, thing, baby.
Vegas.
Yeah. We thought we'd do that, but then when we were in Japan this time round, there was also a typhoon and like, Lauren's parents were just like really not keen. They were just like, we do not want you to get married in Japan. Just don't really?
And so what are you doing? Where are you getting married?
We're getting married at Port Phillip Estate on the peninsula.
You've really come around that.
Beautiful.
It's very close to where her parents live and we've got a lot. Like they've got a house there that people can use and it's going to be good.
Will it stress you out a little bit, the whole wedding thing? Or
to be honest, we just realized like with the amount of connections we have amongst Melbourne, it just didn't make any sense to do it anywhere else. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah.
And it's proved cheaper anyway. My parents and her parents are stoked because they don't have to travel now. So,
well, I mean, it will be just a memory in a year and a half's time that you can watch back or not if you don't get a videographer.
Mm-hmm. When are you going to get married?
So the wedding thing is what I'm not sure on. The wedding side of things, like the idea of
Have you guys spoken about it?
Yeah, I like the idea of like being a little bit older, and so then you
what
really
do you mean though.
Well, so say if we're like 35 or something. Mm-hmm. Say if you're in your like 30s, then you've really because you think about how many people have weddings, and it's like, oh, what happened to your best man? It's like, oh yeah, we've fallen out of touch, not really like connecting anymore. Like that happens with everyone, right? Like if you go into and look at someone's.
I don't think it applies in this case. How long have you guys been together?
We've been together 12 years.
Yeah. Same with Lauren and I.
And so the thinking being, it's like if we're really, this is the thinking, and maybe it's a little bit flawed, super cashed up. We even potentially have our own place. Like wouldn't it be fucking awesome to have an epic place where you can have a really cool wedding, but you have it at our own home or something like that.
I don't know.
But then we're not having it in the Collingwood apartment, unfortunately. Like there's a lot of wind.
No, I think that's fine. You can just have a party too. You don't have to do
parties. I don't have parties.
You can have a dinner.
What do you mean?
I don't have parties.
Yeah, Friday night drinks.
We did that once. Yeah. And we'll do it again.
Are we going to do it again?
Yeah, we'll definitely do it again.
You can have a big dinner or something like that. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
or you can go into, you should just. Just shock
it.
Everyone, go to the city, get married.
Do it on
just
this piece of paper. Do it this weekend.
You literally, I actually got a book in. Can we find out about, I think it's about $240 to go into the CBD.
Could we do it public holiday Monday?
Someone has to be there to witness. I'd be happy to. Mr. 97's could too. We could do it for a bit of content. Oh, yeah.
That'd be fun.
And next minute
you bring the gimbal? Would you be our videographer on your gimbal?
I'll bring the mobile gimbal.
Would you really?
Yeah, why not? That's actually round the corner from me.
Perfect.
What, the
Treasury building?
Okay, that's where
you'd have to get it done.
Is that where it is? You know that?
Yeah, yeah.
Talking about podcast stuff, we're pre-recording.
Yeah, how do we get to this?
I don't know. No, this is good. No, this is great. This is what it's all about. But I wanted to get your thoughts because I did a tweet the other day about the Australian podcast ranker.
Australian podcast ranker. What's that?
And if you're not a podcast wanker, what is that?
So the podcast ranker, you might have seen it in the news a few months ago, oh, probably 6 months ago. Commercial, like radio, oh, it's the commercial radio Australia's ranking.
Is it done
thing.
By like Podcast One?
No, it's done by Commercial Radio Australia, whatever, CRA or whatever it is, and Triton Digital.
Yeah, which with Triton Digital, who owns Omni and all their clients are like Podcast One, the radio stations, et cetera.
And so this is the interesting thing, right?
I reckon it's an inside job.
Well, is this a Jeff Bezos conspiracy?
Yeah, this is great.
I mean, do we need the UN involved?
Yeah. It's all radio shows.
Yeah, so it is. So it's all radio shows. But here's the kicker, right? So I was reading, Sevs, can you actually bring up the podcast Australian podcast ranker?
And then just that's the ratio of Sevs between you guys.
Mate, I can't bring up anything. And I'm so, just playing with egg in my
just trying to crush it down. Just being like, am I going to have to chuck out this?
I have. I'm ditching the hoodie.
It's like a toothpick. You know, with a toothpick, by the end of it, the wood is like you fucking got splinters. If you, Sevs, look at the bottom of the ranker, it describes how they rank.
So it tells you the formula for how they
and
get
so
the numbers.
What I think would be interesting is we'll get Sevs to say it and then tell me what if you think it's flawed and why it's flawed. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Sevs, have you found it?
Is it on their website?
If you just go to like Radio Today and you'll find like the latest one, which would have been like December 19 or something or 13, and then you click on the link and you see like you get brought up the PDF.
Before we get to that, what do you think matters more, downloads or unique listeners?
Okay, so the downloads versus unique listeners.
Who are you speaking to? Who's your audience?
Yeah, I guess like what's the overall goal? So like for instance, so download what does downloads implies versus what does unique audience or listeners imply? Mm. Unique listeners is the number of people, downloads, how many things they're listening to. Mm. So downloads, I actually think for us, not having a huge number, we would prefer having smaller, unique listeners, higher downloads, which would imply
that they're continually listening.
More people people listening to more shows.
More consistently.
So I think that we
based on our format as well.
Yeah. So versus if you had a high listenership, what that could potentially do, especially with like an interview show, I reckon you would have a higher listenership, lower downloads.
Yeah. Uniques is what I look out for ours.
And so the unique listeners for you, if you have, because you push really the guest out, like the guest element is a big part of it, right? This week we've got this person on.
Yeah.
You'll get a segment of that audience each time. Whereas I think we probably understate the guest part of it a little bit more. So we're not gaining as big a unique listenership each time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that makes sense.
And so for us specifically, because we do 7 days, unique download. If I would actually be wrapped if our unique downloads, unique listeners and download numbers, if unique listeners was low and the downloads were high. If we got to a point where it was like, 90% of our audience listen to fucking 30 episodes a month. That's like the best scenario.
Yeah. And that makes sense. And horses for courses.
Yeah. What does that actually mean, horses for courses?
Cheese for chalk.
Cheese for chalk.
Just made that up. It's just two things that rhyme.
I guess it owes to the fact that you can't just apply one thing to everything.
And so this is what I have issue with the Australian Podcast Ranker. Can you just read? It's very short. Can you just read what it says at the bottom there, Sevs?
The Australian Podcast Ranker is based on a 4-week reporting period. The entities listed are ranked by average weekly downloads Monday to Sunday in accordance with the latest IAB technical measurement guidelines.
Okay, so
average weekly downloads.
So if you are a radio station, so commercial
so
radio.
Jason PJ is going to do better than Will Anderson's Willosophy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why is that?
Because he will have one episode every 2 weeks or a week, whereas Jason PJ will be doing 5 a week.
And so
a bonus episode.
Yeah, and so if you were a radio station and you wanted to play the finite game of trying to rank well, what would you do? If you were in strategy and it's like
for a radio station.
Yeah. So for instance, like the radio station, because it's mainly radio stations, right? Yeah. Or if it was anyone. If you're on the ranker and it's like we want to get to number one, what is a strategy that you would implement? So you want to get the
weekly downloads
up?
I don't know, man. I spoke to Jace the other week when he came in about how do they boost listeners, and he honestly believes it's all in marketing. It's not like you consistently gain more listeners over time for a radio show like theirs, or let's say on this podcast ranking list, but it is when they do marketing that they actually see a boost.
So I get that in the grand scheme of things. How about this, right? This is what I would do. This is what I straight away went to, and what we've seen happen since September, and it's like getting worse. If you are doing, say, 5 days a week, you could say, okay, go do 7 days a week. If it's like Monday to Sunday, it's getting recorded or analyzed, do more shows. Then the other thing is, okay, if it is download numbers, what happens if you segment your shows? Like rather than putting up the whole show.
So are people doing that?
And so, yeah, what's been happening and what I tweeted about was there's a couple of companies, radio companies that are doing this, networks, where they're not being outrageous with it, but what they're doing is saying, we're going to post into the feed our 1 hour show, but then for every one of those, we're also doing like a 6 minute segment of one of the bits. And so then what you have doubled your weekly download numbers by adding double the amount of content.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I mean, what are they meant to? No one's going to hold them accountable, though.
But so this is the thing. So what's the point of it? So then you got to start asking. It's like I'm not negative against the people who are doing it, because it's just a strategy that would actually work. If your boss says we need to increase downloads per week, it's like, oh fuck. Well, why don't we just break it up with Jason PJ? I wouldn't be surprised. Like if I was looking at it from a purely numbers point of view, I'd say, okay, you know that pre-show bit that you do, make that its own thing.
Which they have been doing. Or they've been doing like mini episodes every now and then.
Yeah. And so there are companies that are going really hard where you see it. So what do you think about the ranker? Like, is there a way of doing this? How, I guess...
This is a more philosophical, but like strategic question. When I think I messaged you like after Jace's interview about how, because one of the things I asked him is so we're in this sort of in-between period, right? Like it's obvious that indie or smaller production teams like this can exist in a world of entertainment and do well, right? So we know that is the case. Most of the ways that it is done is, you know, you publish through iTunes, YouTube, et cetera. You've still got the ARNs, the SCAs of the world where they're now cottoning on to that. So how do you get to a point where we as the indies can compete with that, because they have the marketing budgets that we don't have? And I guess that was one of the things I messaged you about, is like there's something in, I don't know, I feel like there's something in billboards. There's something in developing or banding together for a lot of these largest indie podcasts and doing something around pooling funds to market.
Well, I think
better,
if you
in a mainstream sense, because you've got to spend a minimum amount with the
media. And if you sort of step sideways to go, the radio stations are commercial entities, so they need to make money, and a way to make money is by selling podcast advertising. One of the ways to sell podcast advertising is look like you have huge numbers or have lots of downloads, because when you're talking with any brand, they want to understand, how many downloads do you guys get? And it can't be low, it has to be high.
Yeah.
A podcast ranking that is exclusive to, or seemingly at the start exclusive to, radio stations, these networks, is a brand piece or a marketing piece that people will look to. I was at a person's house that's in tech industry but was in marketing and said, referenced that list, right? Said, oh, yeah, I saw the Australian radio things, you know, Hamish and Andy. You see how it creating something like that is serving the commercial networks sell advertising to fund their business, right?
It was created by the association.
Yeah.
So that's then on marketers who are buying from these radio stations to keep them accountable, but also more kudos to the radio stations for coming up with a non-biased system that gives them more props, if that makes sense.
But I think that the
so why don't we just do that?
Well, so I think we are. We're doing it right this second. Now, I'll tell you, like, the difference between doing the billboard thing. Everyone, you guys are getting ready. Fucking fixing your postures. Yeah. Getting ready for
but
it.
But like, if you want to do this, you need to get the shameless podcast of the world on board to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing on the billboard. So putting an ad on a billboard for us, we basically need to convince 80% of the people who are in the cars that they should be listening to podcasts at all. They're not, like, they're currently not doing it. And so what I like about the radio industry and what they're doing is every time they say, download our podcast, go to iHeart, download the podcast, they are increasing the amount of people who are listening to podcasts. What I think that we can do and the best marketing that we can have is cross-pollination by being on each other's shows. Mm. Because then if someone hears this right now, the audience size is 100% of the audience that is listening to this listens to podcasts, which means the translation.
Unless you're watching on YouTube and have never downloaded a podcast in your life.
Yeah.
Should try it. It's good.
But I think that there is, we've got to consider that, which is, I don't think it makes any sense for us at this particular moment to spend money on mainstream media unless I think that the only reason that you would do it is if I was, say, Ticker, sound like Aaron, and I want to raise a bunch of cash and I want to position what I'm doing as a TV competing with TV networks, I would use things like billboards as status or as a way of demonstrating, you know, the posture of being a TV network that would get people to buy in. Mm. But I don't think that for us and what we're doing, it would actually increase the amount of downloads than, say, a great, you know, podcast collaboration.
Well, I guess that comes to like the question of like monetization and networks, like because networks have been a big thing in the US. So, I mean, when are you guys going to consider monetizing?
Well, we are, like, we're definitely doing it, but it's been more iterative. It's been less like saying we're going to do all these ads. So it starts off.
Yeah, it's less ad rolls and more experimental stuff.
Yeah,
right?
And so, like, we did the Four Seasons integration, which was awesome.
That was
with
good.
90 Sevs. We've done. We work
He's brave boy, isn't he?
We
taking one for the team.
Ventura IP, our web host. We've got a great relationship with them, and so it is that longer game that we're playing. But I think that you definitely hit on an important point around the network stuff. Like, I think that the one area that we want to work in or work with in 2020 is what does it look like to have a network? Not necessarily the traditional network of having 100 of our own shows, like sort of a podcast one, but what does it mean to be an independent network? So what does it mean to have the benefits of a network with people like you and your show? Like, how do we create that web without having to say, hey, come on board, we're going to take a cut? Because I don't see the long-term benefits. I've just seen too many times the Southern Cross Oz Stereos of the world building personal brands, building the Hamish and Andys of the world, or giving a platform or saying, hey, here's a room, and then Hamish and Andy build this amazing thing. Hamish and Andy don't really owe SCA anything. They don't owe Podcast One anything. So they can just leave at any moment. And then the question becomes, what are you as a network?
Yeah.
And I believe that the networks are the people. And unless there is actual proper buy-in for those networks, unless those people who are talent own the network, you're renting people.
Yeah. I think you got to see it like an industry association in a way, the way the industry associations will promote the benefits of their people that are members and work on things that are mainly like marketing or promotional related.
So what would you do? What do you think we should do?
I don't know. It's something that I need to think about deeper. I know that there is a good example in the US. Something Wolf is the name of the
Earwolf.
So the way they did it is they just brought in talent and they co-promoted amongst the other podcasts that they have. And I think they pulled marketing dollars as well. Because another thing is, like you said before about promoting podcasts on other podcasts, like I think I did I speak to you about Podcorn at the
Yeah, no, you spoke to me. We registered.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
I've noticed that there are other podcasts now paying or setting campaigns up on Podcorn.
Well, I've got a theory on that too.
Podcorn, quick overview.
Yeah.
Marketplace for podcast ads.
If you've got a podcast, you can sign up and there's brands looking for people.
And
looking
so
for
then podcasters are now appearing as brands.
Yeah.
Let's say Jordan, what's his last name?
Harbinger. Yeah, something like
that.
Harbinger. He's on there saying, hey, I'm wanting to advertise. And the thing is that if you read the description, he says, message me with your downloads numbers. And so my theory around that is that that's actually just an exercise in gaining data. So he wants it because I DM'd, I had like a 5-minute DM with him. We tried to get him on when we were in Los Angeles and he's like, first question was like download numbers and all that sort of thing. And we're like sort of quite friendly in conversation. Then as soon as he got all of our stats, it was sort of like done. And so when I then saw him promoting that, I was like, oh, clever. He's probably got like, seems like the type of guy that would probably have a fucking VA somewhere and he's just running all these numbers and he has a good sense of like the, like it's clever. It's a good sense of the industry.
So what's it doing? What's the benefit for him
by
doing that?
So the benefit would be gaining IP around, like there's no public way for us to really understand what sort of download numbers people are getting.
Yeah.
And so if you start getting a good sense and maybe there's 5% of what he's doing, like of that Podcorn or whatever example, where he then goes and says they're actually really undervalued with how many people they have listening versus what they're asking from advertising, and then they'd spend it. But I connected those two interactions. I was like, oh, maybe he's building out that thing, especially if you are up at the, he's doing a lot of work in regards to like growth hacking and trying to build up his his podcast. It's pretty skeptical.
I've never listened to his podcast.
He's probably never listened to yours. Yeah.
It's all good. He was on the he had the Art of Charm podcast that was his, and then he rebranded or he left that and is doing that now. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a it feels like a small community here in Australia.
It does. It is small.
Australia is small.
I mean,
in comparison.
Well, I don't know what I haven't looked at the latest ABC. Like, you know how they collect that data on how many people are actually listening to podcasts and whatnot, which makes me wonder around like, how do you make it in this space here? Because I feel like, you know, this is one thing that we had with our show where we've moved away from the mics and gone towards more of an interview show style setting. Is thinking about, do you pitch the show to do a series on like a network or something like that? Like, where's our place in the market and how do you make it mainstream, I guess?
I think we're trying to be a little bit more like platform agnostic. So it's not like we're, and that's what you're doing as well, like talking about it being a show rather than just a podcast.
Yeah.
I think what about if you approach any creative project with, you're not going to be the megastar. You're not going to be the Tom Cruise of acting, the Logan Paul of YouTube, but which are the unicorns. They're the grain of sand in the world. Like in the-
That's very poetic.
100%. I'm a poetic guy.
Sands
you know?
Of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a single strain of hair.
I was trying to just really give it that perspective.
Of a horse. Horses for courses.
And then so you go- Well, what is the other options? The other options isn't competing for the you're not playing the status games of everybody else.
Yeah, I guess it comes back to the fact of what is it that you actually want from what you're doing. I mean, to be honest, if I just continue doing the podcast and we don't make any money and we just make our money through the creative side of the business, I'd be quite happy.
Isn't that monetizing the podcast then? Like this is where I think the framing.
But this is lifestyle creep. This is what happens when you get to a certain level and you keep improving and you just keep asking yourself these. You have ideas of what's the word, like grandioseness, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
I think
sense.
I've got lifestyle creep with my book, my books and that wine cellar I want to build.
Oh, my God. I was listening to that last night.
Are you on board?
Well, so I used to work as a sommelier when I was in
That's like a uni. Wine specialist? Wine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't remember what was the rationale for you even doing it?
Having wine or what?
The wine bit or the
book cellar, bit? The cellar.
The cellar's just he like... Just,
it was a piece of information in the story where he walked through his cellar into the yeah. wine, which and is a reason, weird thing to have your books I was through actually, your wine cellar yeah. into another room.
No, so what I was doing was anchoring the financials. So it's easier for me to sell to Bree, like, hey, yeah. what I'm talking about spending on books is a month is only like 3 bottles of good wine.
Mm. I would say that it's a better investment buying the books anyway.
Yeah, because you consume the wine.
As an individual,
wine,
you're going to have a far more exponential return.
You've got to read the books though, Jordan. You have to read them.
He doesn't read them.
To get the return.
Do you read all the books you buy?
You got a few books in your...
I do,
in your
yeah.
All the one, I feel like the ones that you have in the background you maybe read because there's...
No. Just in case I've read them asked. All except for one that are, the ones that are up in this little corner because for a while I was buying like 50 at a time and
that's
I'd read
right.
them through
yeah,
the year.
That's right, yeah, you do that, yeah.
But now, listen to Tim Ferriss as well, hadn't you, mate?
Yeah. Now I'm not.
Actually, I also need to check George's mum from Byron Bay so she'll potentially buy my stock.
Great.
on writing. So I need to check how many copies I have.
Yeah, great, we'll do that today.
And I need to also find a fair price. I want to be fair.
Yeah.
Like I really, I don't even, yeah. What do you? What are the? Was it going before? Anyway,
yeah.
Yeah.
So the
wine. So the wine thing. So if I want to get into wine, because I'm always seeing you and Lauren at like Red Hill or some shit.
So we would buy a couple bottles a year, like 8 bottles a year that are nice, and we'll put them away in Lauren's dad.
You just said
made
a couple, and then you said 8. Is that lifestyle crepe? You said a couple of bottles, 8 bottles.
I don't know. 8 is a small number as opposed to 100 or whatever it was that you came up with.
Well, 100 is over a long period of. Time, but do you hold on to wine and not drink it?
I rotate them. So like we're drinking wines that we bought in 2012 at the moment. So when we
good
went
year.
To Europe, we
good
bought-
year, good, yeah, great good blend. Year.
Well, they're not from 2012. We just bought them in 2012.
But it's still great year.
Yeah, like the wines are fantastic. We have a lot of good memories. Like for us, it's
from
about
2012.
The memories. Yeah, because we're traveling in Europe.
And so you want to drink as much wine that you forget the memory. Is that the idea?
No, it's
so,
just, it's nice. Yeah, like yeah. Yeah, I enjoy, idea. Like, you got a big Greek fan. I only open it at, like, birthdays, Christmases, Easters.
Really?
I
so
don't
not
drink
on a Wednesday
much.
Night?
Nah.
What if the party's on Wednesday night?
Yeah, like, I'll go to, like, Blackheart and Sparrows and buy, like, a $40, $50 bottle.
Where's that? Is that in?
There's a couple around here. Like, there's one in Smith Street in Collingwood.
Mm-hmm. What's the most expensive wine you've drank?
So there used to be a guy. Do you guys know the guy who owns Specsavers? Have you ever seen him on the ads? You know the old Specsavers ads?
Isn't that where your mum works? Does she work at Specsavers?
Yeah, I don't know if she knows the owner though.
The owner used to be in the ads. He's sort of got like a comb over hair, sort of smart looking dude. He'd always cross his arms at the end and say some line. But
should have gone to Specsavers?
Yeah. He was something like that, yeah. I'm pretty sure he used to say that. Anyway, so I worked at the Botanical as a wine waiter. This is when the Botanical went into receivership and
where is the Botanical? Is
that's
that
on
Botanical Gardens?
No. Domain, road, from Domain the road.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So good spot.
So I got a job as a sommelier when I shouldn't have because all I had was experience as a waiter who really liked wine, but they couldn't hire anyone because everyone's like, fuck, the Botanical went broke, blah, blah, blah. Get this job. I'm working like 40 hours a week. And on Saturdays, you get this guy who'd come in and he'd buy like a bottle of Lafite Rothschild, which is like a $2,000 bottle, $3,000 bottle. And he'd have it with a plate of cheese. He'd sit there for 2 hours
by himself?
On his own.
Far out.
And he'd leave me like this much and I've still got all the bottles at home.
What, he said to you? Mate, here's a bit. Do you
yeah,
want
he,
some?
He'd always leave me like half a glass.
And he'd say though, this is for you.
Yeah. He's a lovely guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a real
fanny cheese.
It was a real power move yeah, too. Nah, like he's feeling good.
Yeah, he's cheese. Like, I am so wealthy yeah. that I will leave you yeah. this half.
Did you count? Were you like, okay, that was a 2.5 grand bottle?
No,
that's
not
about
really. I just enjoyed it.
And so,
and
wait,
was
so
it,
have
was
you
it
got
good?
It all?
Was it good?
Did you say that you have the bottles still?
Yeah, I've got them. They're on the book.
Have they got the drink in them or no?
No,
because it goes back. Because you.
Yeah, I didn't drink it, Josh, and I just left it in the bottle.
No, but as in, like, I thought. Because once you've opened it, it's fucked. You need to drink it straight away.
Yeah, you drink it straight away. I would let others taste it just so they could learn what this wine tastes like. Yeah.
I love that you just this all of a sudden, I'll let you have some. But Jordan's become a real bitch since the Specsaver guys.
That's the job though, because you'd be doing training for people and you want them to see what these.
What does it taste like? What is a $2,500 bottle of wine? How does it taste different to the $23 one from Dan Murphy's?
I reckon there is not much difference between. It depends on the wine and who makes it. Honestly, yeah. you can buy a $30 bottle at Black Heart and Sparrows, and it'll be far better than a $200 bottle that you'll find at Dan's. I often find, because it's dependent on the quality of the winemaker. But when you get to that level, you're tasting wines that are made by a machine that basically removes all not a machine, yeah. but like a system that removes all imperfections. Mm-hmm. In the wine, through the age of the vines, through the processes in which they make it.
So is organic important?
Depends.
Do you get
for Lauren? It does. She gets a red flush if she has like lots of sulfur based wines.
Oh, I saw. I think it was Gemma's mum. She's allergic to something in the red wine, she had wine drops. And you put it into the wine and
that's next level, isn't it? I'm fucking having this drink. Just fucking putting in the
I thought it was a great idea. They look cute little drops.
Well, it's just like people who can, it's like Mikey with his dairy.
Oh, yeah. Has his
like fucking
lactase. Yeah, you have
lactase. Like just at that point.
Well, you have your cheese and then you smash your lactase. It's like
that's fine. Have your cheese with an and eat lactase. Pump. That's very funny. Yeah, smoke with an
asthma. Back to these wines from 2012. We bought a lot of stuff in Italy in this place in Pienza where it's a wine shop owned by an old bloke who knows the region, and he would just buy local wineries and he'd buy like a case of every single wine they'd make and not really like is going for these medium sort of wineries, these wineries that hadn't been around as long, but now they've been around for a while. And so we like bought bottles that were from 1986 that were €15 and we brought back, and there's none of them in Australia, and they were fucking amazing.
And so how do you, what's the, because I could get around this. So import, bringing it in.
You can bring, I don't know what it is, 90 sevs, but.
There's a certain amount of literage?
That you can bring like 4 or 5 bottles or something like
it's
that.
It's not much, is it?
It's each, not much.
I guess each.
Each per person. So, when we 10. Brought it back, we brought back like 10
bottles. Yeah, 2.25 litres per adult.
Yeah. So my brother bought back a stash when he left France, and then I brought a stash back with Lauren.
Should we be doing this? Like if we ever go to Europe, is it just a...
Honestly, Josh, no.
Really?
I mean, if you go to Europe,
you don't know what you're doing. Like, or you need to know what.
Because I'll just go to the Dan Murphy's equivalent in London. I mean,
isn't it just another thing to do?
Yeah, isn't that what life is?
Yeah, it's true. It's a good point. I don't know.
I'll go to Wings and Sparrows or whatever you said.
Black Hearts and Sparrows is really good.
All right. Jordan, we should make this a regular. Actually, maybe
I need to have you guys back.
Yeah,
it's been a while since you were on.
I mean, the thing is that your format's obviously that found like that biographical sort of thing. Could we do? I guess we can't really do banter. Well, if we came back, what would you like to talk about? Just
we can do banter. I mean, I think it's horses for courses.
Chalk for cheese.
Yeah. It just depends. I mean, we get guests on regularly now, which we just, it's more of a band style, but I enjoy
How are you fitting three people into your setup? Have you done it yet?
We haven't done it yet.
How many seats have you got? You've only got two seats.
If you want to have Josh around to talk to you about books he hasn't read.
I'd love to do wine and books. Are you stingy with your wine? Like if I was to hang out with you, if I was hanging out with you, would you be like, have some wine. Or you're like, no, Lauren, this is Lauren and my thing. Like that fucking glass, that's a
6. I'll always get something nice because I don't drink very freely.
No, but as in, say if I was to hang out with you.
Yeah.
And like we came over and we had dinner.
Yeah.
Would you open up wine?
I would probably go to Black Hearts and Sparrows and buy like a $40, $50.
Okay, sure. Do you talk about the wine when you're there?
Yeah, I want to know about who made it, where's it from,
and would you tell the people at?
Yeah.
So this is where
This is how you used to sell as a sommelier. You could bring a bottle that's $100 and $200 next to each other, and if the story's better on the $200 one, they'd take that.
And so, what's the ethics around like or the social sort of stuff? Because say Sevs and I went to Gem's New Year's Eve party and we brought some alcohol, and then she said, now is this for the fridge or for the esky First of all, I'm like, what's the difference? Do you guys know what the difference is in regards to
I don't know.
Fridge or esky? Do you want to drink it right now or you want to put it in the fridge for later?
Fridge or esky though?
Esky. Esky is like Esky's quick like accessibility. What was it? What was the alcohol?
What it was wasn't, it? Champagne.
It wasn't red wine.
It was champagne.
I'd love to see what the audience thinks about esky etiquette. You know, yeah, is it beers only? Is it beers and wine?
And so
because like the wine labels can start to, some of them can start to sort of peel off.
You've never had wine
but you're drinking
esky,
white wine or rosé at that point. It's like churning, you're just churning through that shit. Esky's like ready to go.
Yeah.
Unless it's an esky off to the side that is closed that you like put some shit in there that you want.
Were there two eskies?
Yeah, I don't know.
If anything at Gemma's house, the ready to go is in the esky.
But so
quick
what we
drink.
But what we did, Bree and I were like, we ended up having like margaritas and stuff, and we're like, oh, we didn't actually need the champagne, and so we're like, let's leave it for Gemma.
Yeah.
And we told her the next day, like, we left you some champagne.
Or a Dom Perignon. Yeah.
And she's like, oh, it's not there. And she did a whole investigation and found her pregnant friend had drank it.
Drank a glass, not a bottle.
Yeah, with her friends.
You can't drink a fucking bottle when you're pregnant.
No, I was.
You can't.
You can or you
know you probably shouldn't.
You probably
Amy had, Amy had a, half a glass.
Yeah.
I'm not promoting it.
I mean, look, my mum drank and smoked for the first 3 months when she was pregnant with me. She didn't even know.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. Just can't swallow sometimes.
Jordan Michaelides, thanks, buddy, for coming on the show.
We'll do it again and have a wine or something.
Awesome.
Oh, that'd be good, an episode with a wine.
Yeah, I'd love that. Red wine.
Let's do that.
And I'll offline. I want to get a list.
Wine library. We're gonna. We need maybe three bottles, not to get through them all, but to taste the difference and hear the stories from Jordan.
Five seconds. The empathy wine thing, all rah rah or actually good wine.
It's okay.
It's rah rah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right. And that's not because Gary V didn't show up. You know.
No. It's just okay, Rosé.
Okay. Rosé. There's the title of the show. It's a daily talk show. If you enjoy the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, check out Jordan's podcast every single Tuesday. Is it when you release it?
Tuesday, Wednesday.
With a guest every day. It's called Uncommon. Just type that in. Otherwise, see you tomorrow, guys.
See you guys. Yeah.